Welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf, the show that lifts the lid on New Zealand's distilling magic. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf, your guide to the flavours, the people and the inspiration behind our top local spirits. We'll hear what drives these distillers to create their signature blends and maybe discover a new favourite along the way. So whether you're a gin lover or a whiskey wizard, join us on the ride and always keep it classy and drink responsibly.
Kia ora and welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf. I'm your host, Susie Carrick from the New Zealand Spirit Guide, and we're here to pour you the stories behind Aotearoa's most intriguing spirits and the people who make them. Today, we're heading into the heart of South Canterbury to a small town of Geraldine, where a boutique gin distillery is making a serious name for itself without taking itself too seriously. It's called Humdinger Gin, and it's run by Andrew and Saskia, a pair of spirited minds who bring together engineering precision and botanical curiosity to craft some seriously good gin. Whether it's their bold dry or their dangerously sippable citrus or their award-winning slow, Humdinger is one of those distilleries that flies under the radar until you taste it. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Wow, thank you, Susie. And yeah, thanks a lot for having me on the show. No pressure after that introduction.
Right, okay. So let's start with what were you doing before Humdinger? What was your background? And was distilling always in the back of your mind, or did it just one day come out of the blue?
So before we started Humdinger, both Saskia and I were working for Fonterra in a range of roles across different parts of the country. But our last big job was building and commissioning a brand new mozzarella cheese plant near Geraldine. And it was a massive $240 million project. I was in the engineering team and Saskia was in the technical team. And it was just such an incredible experience that once we finished the project, kind of got a little bit boring. And we wanted to tackle something exciting and new for ourselves. We'd always actually thought we would start a small cheese shop, but Geraldine already has an amazing cheese shop here, and we wanted to stay here in town, so it needed to be something else. We'd been bouncing ideas around for quite a while, and nothing really jumped out. And what we always find is the best ideas always seem to pop up when you're on holiday and taking time off. You're just out of that day-to-day rush, all that stress. And we were actually up in Wellington at Saskia's brother's wedding. And we were staying in this Airbnb, and you know what it's like, you're kind of killing time between all of the appointments you have with a family wedding.
Yeah.
I was flicking through some books, and I can remember vividly pulling out this book with a blue cover titled The Bartender's Guide to Gin. And I started flicking through the book, and I casually said, oh, wonder if we should start a gin distillery. And Saskia's dad was sitting on the other side of the room, and he just casually said, yep, do it. And he had never said yes to any of our other ideas. So I kind of did a double take, and I was like, oh, maybe there's something behind that. And gin has always been our drink of choice. Well, since university, when we could actually afford it.
Yeah, yeah.
And we started, well, we were getting married a month later, so we had to park the idea. Get through our wedding, and yeah, from there it just kept evolving.
So what was the moment that you went sort of maybe to let's do this?
So after our wedding, we purchased a small 10-litre still, and we were kind of just dabbling. We hadn't committed too much. Then we went to Canada for our honeymoon, and it kind of turned into an informal distillery tour when we were in Canada. And we were in Toronto and we visited this amazing distillery called the Spirit of York. And it's just amazing. It's this huge brick building. And when you go inside it, they've got these massive glass panes where you can see all of the stills, all of the equipment. And that just really captured our, yeah, just made us say, wow, really. And one of the workers there actually noticed how curious we were. And he led us through the still room. So we're walking in amongst these really big stills and tanks. We went out the back and he showed us their big copper columns that you can't see from the front. and they were encased in glass as well. And we just said, yep, this is what we're going to do. So we went to a public park nearby that had free Wi-Fi. We jumped on the New Zealand company's website and then we registered the business there and then. I don't know if that's the safest thing to do using public Wi-Fi, unsecured network, but we did it. And when we actually flew from Toronto to Calgary for the second leg of our holiday, we had all of these drawings of different stills that we'd found online and we started doing design reviews saying, what still are we going to buy? So yeah, kind of just all went from there.
Okay, so firstly, why Humdinger? Why did you come up with the name Humdinger?
So coming up with a name, that was really hard. And we were doing some research on local history and there was a haberdashery here in Geraldine and we just love that word. It's really unique and it's quite quirky, but you can't call a distillery a haberdashery. So we wanted something similar and the word Humdinger popped up. It's kind of old school. It's really quirky. We've got a Google alert set up to make sure whenever it's used in the media or online, it sends us where it's been used. And it's actually only used in New Zealand to describe rugby matches, saying it was a humdinger of a match. So it's just a relatively unique word that just clicked perfectly for making humdinger gins.
Okay, that's cool. Now, you and Saskia bring some pretty cool skills to the table, like we've discussed with your engineering and with her and her biology and tech. How does that mix of science and curiosity play out in the day-to-day running of the still?
So our blend of still, I understand. So it plays out really well, but it does come with some risks or some issues at the same time. So like we both love running the still and we've modified that to the point where every batch is extremely consistent. And like the rest of our processes are really efficient, really well controlled too. We use a lot of science when we're developing new gins, looking at the actual flavor chemistry and what compounds work really well together. But we're both very firm on our views and we've got really different palates. And we both enjoy different styles of gins. So when it comes to applying that science and developing new gins, we actually can't work together. So it's either a Saskia gin or it's an Andrew gin. And if you look at each of our bottles, it's either got her name or my name on it because she wants something in a gin that I don't want in there. You have to be aware of it, right? But the other thing is because being in the still room and making gin, that's our comfortable space. It means that we naturally defer there. So we ignore the branding, the marketing, all of that stuff that we're not as experienced in. So kind of that stuff falls by the wayside as when things get hard, we go hide in the still room.
That's cool. Okay. So now that you're in the still room, let's walk me through a batch from selecting your botanicals to running the still and bottling. What's the most hands-on part of the process and what are the parts that are fixed versus that are always sort of evolving?
Mm-hmm. Whenever we see an opportunity to make better gin, we just have to take it. If that means it's harder for us or it takes longer or it costs more, we can't unsee that opportunity. That's just in our DNA. So we're always very hands-on. But stepping right back to the botanical side, it's not just selecting botanicals that you'll use in a gin. It's also selecting where they come from. But like coriander seeds, a classic. Depending where it's grown, it actually has a really different flavor profile. We've tried coriander seed grown here in Canterbury. But it was quite green, quite grassy, and that wasn't really the flavour profile we were wanting from coriander seed. We tried some from Bulgaria, and it was really bright with nice citrus and nice spice, super clean, and that's exactly what we wanted from the coriander seed. So you select what type of gin you want, and you find the botanicals, and then you have to find the botanical sources. And then from there, they go into our botanical store. So we've got a room that's temperature and humidity controlled. Being engineers, we control, if you can control it, you need to, right? Because we want to make the most consistent gin. Because if each batch isn't consistent, how do you improve? is just scatter gun. So yeah, we've got our temperature controlled and humidity controlled room. So we'll weigh our botanicals in there rather than taking them out to heat up and putting them back in. From there, they go into the still. So we do a steep and boil method. So all of our botanicals steep in the alcohol and water inside the still overnight, and then we boil it up the next day. Mm-hmm. So even the alcohol and water we fill the still with, we weigh that out precisely using these massive big scales. Again, so it's all repeatable. We actually got the scales from Queen Anne's Chocolates in Christchurch when they were modernising their factory, and they're just perfect for what we want. From there, the next morning, we'll turn the still on, and it's about a 6-hour run before we'll start tasting the gin to take the tails cut, which is when those undesirable flavours come through. So typically, I have a different tails cut to Saskia because, again, we have different palates, and what we're looking for in a gin changes. And then from there, we dilute our gin slowly to 40%, which or ABV, which is where we bottle at. So it takes about 2 weeks for us to dilute, and then it's 2 months of resting to really let the gins mellow out. So we don't want any heat or any bite in our gins. So it's a really long 2 month mellowing stage. So yeah, from there we bottle, which is all really hands on, but we've got a great team who comes in and helps us with that. Then it goes into our warehouse.
Wow. And is that temperature controlled?
No, but it's pretty cold, which is great.
Okay. Now, I've read that your dry gin uses Canterbury barley. Is this a grain-based spirit, or do you use the barley more as a botanical to add a flavour complexity?
So it's not our base spirit. We use a sugarcane-based spirit here for all of our gins. We use barley inside the still as a botanical, and it's not for flavour, it's more for mouthfeel. So barley actually gives the gin a nice, round, oily mouthfeel that gives a feeling that it's not a 40% ABV gin. It actually makes it feel like it's a little bit stronger. So yeah, it's, I don't know anyone else doing that, but it works really well for us.
Yeah, no, that's why I asked, because no, I'm not aware of anyone else doing that either. That's cool. Now, I know you mentioned in the early days you had your 10-litre copper still from Portugal, and now you've scaled up to your 50-litre system. Can you paint us a picture of what your current still lineup is like and how that evolution has shaped your gin making?
So yeah, we started with a 10-litre copper alembic still from Portugal, which we have since sold, and we've replaced that with a 3-litre version, and that's what we use for all of our recipe development. So all of our new gins, like our upcoming summer gin, that's being developed on our 3-litre still, and that gets scaled up onto our big 220-litre still. But when we started commercially 5 years ago, we started with a 50-litre still that we purchased brand new. But we got to a point where we were using that every day, and it was great. We learned a huge amount by running the still so frequently, but we ran out of time. So a 220-litre German Holstein still popped up for sale. Some people say, oh, I guess you don't see those things on Trade Me, but we actually did buy it off Trade Me, which is quite funny. So yeah, it was built 30 years ago in Germany, and it was imported by a winery up in Marlborough to make grape-based spirits. So your cognacs, your armagnacs, your grappas type of thing. But it hadn't been used for about 10 years when we purchased it. So we refurbished the whole thing, all new seals, new valves, converted the heating system from gas to electric. It's a lot safer and a lot more compliant. And yeah, we've learned so much from that German still, just looking at why they've designed it that way and figuring it out. But we've also made a lot of modifications and tweaks so it makes the style of gin that we really enjoy. So yeah,
of course you did.
We can't help ourselves.
No, I bet you can't. I can imagine it's sort of a Frankenstein of all sorts of bits and pieces to get it exactly where you want it.
An elegant Frankenstein.
I can imagine it's very elegant. Now, your citrus gin has a bit of a cult following, especially with the summer G&T lovers. How do you get that bold citrus hit without losing the structure and depth of your gin?
So the citrus gin, that's one of Saskia's gins. Right. I can't take any credit for it. When she started developing it, she had a very clear vision of what she wanted from the gin. Kind of lemon and ginger was their inspiration, but she wanted to translate that into a nice gin profile. So to get depth from a gin, you need to complement the juniper with spice notes. So if you try a gin and it has really great depth, it's likely the spice botanicals coming through to give that beautiful depth. So in the case of the citrus gin, we use a lot of ginger, and that gives the gin the nice depth and structure that pairs well with, of course, juniper, but also the orange and lemon. So ginger has a lot of flavor compounds that are the same as in citrus. So naturally, they work very, very well together. And when Saskia developed it, it was really unique. It was the only gin with the hero botanicals of orange, lemon, and ginger on the market. So it kind of hit a nice gap in the market. Just seemed to tick the boxes and taste amazing.
Just go back briefly. What year was it that you launched?
It was 2020 that we launched commercially. So yeah, 5 years ago now.
Right. Okay, now then we go on to your slow gin, which is made with locally sourced slows, which I know is extremely tricky to get in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. How do you source them, and are there years that you have to get a little bit creative?
So Saskia's parents actually grow them for us. And wow. They have established an orchard where they've got over 1,000 slow trees now. Like, it's really cool. And they're all in bloom at the moment. So there's these big rows of slow trees that are now well established, flowers everywhere. It's really quite special to see what they have created for us, essentially. So they only supply us. So when you look in bottle stores for a slow gin, if it's in a bottle store, we are likely the only ones with a New Zealand grown slow gin in a bottle store. There's a couple of small distilleries who sell them themselves. Yeah, we're the only wholesale slow gin made from New Zealand slows.
Wow. So they pop into that just for you, basically.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's been a big learning curve, though, because the fruit changes every year. So it's kind of like wine with a vintage, and that the different weather or climate growing conditions, that all produces different flavor profiles with the slows each year. So we're kind of learning with our engineering brains, you do it one way all the time and it's nice and repeatable, but with the slows you can't. You need to really work with the flavor of the slows, which is a challenge, but it's also really rewarding as we just love the slow gin.
Yeah. I remember tasting it at one of the festivals. It was definitely one of my favorites too. Right. So award-wise, you've also done pretty well, including a silver at the London Spirit Competition. How much do accolades factor into what you do, and what awards are you most proud of?
So awards, they're a funny thing. We use awards to get feedback from the judges, but also to help with marketing purposes, because a nice shiny gold medal on a bottle has to help, right, in a bottle store. But if we're at a point where we don't need feedback, like say we've tweaked a recipe and that gin's not ready for bottling yet, or we've just won a gold medal for a gin or something like that, there's no point in spending money to enter a competition. So we won't. So we use them, for feedback from the judges and for nice shiny stickers in a bottle. But I do feel that the consumers are getting a little bit jaded about competitions, because there are so many gins, including ours, have got multiple stickers from different competitions, and what do they actually mean at the end of the day? And we kind of get that feedback at gin festivals too. When you go, oh yeah, this has won a gold medal, some people will reply, hasn't every gin won a gold medal now? So yeah, as long as you've got a clear purpose, which for us is feedback and marketing, then that's all good.
Yeah, you make a very, very good point there. Now, running a distillery in a small town must have its unique challenges. What's been one of the trickiest hurdles you've had to face so far?
So we haven't had anything that can't be solved yet, but it did get a bit tight when we needed a larger premises. So our original site was perfect for when we started, but when we started adding in more tanks and a larger still and carrying more pallets of bottles and the like, it started getting really, really tight and inefficient because you'd have to move three things to get what you needed. And we were keeping an eye on real estate in the town, and there were no suitable sites popping up for rent or for sale. And being a small town, there's quite slim pickings, really. So we started wondering what to do, and Saskia simply approached the owners of where we are now, which we think is the best site in town.
Yeah.
So approached them, and they were open to an offer. And literally 7 months later, we opened to the public. So in that time, we got a valuation. We bought the property, we moved every wall apart from two, got the consents, got the licenses, moved the equipment, commissioned all of that, and turned on the music and opened the doors. 7 months, it was crazy, but now we've got the most amazing site that we think is the best site in town, and it's got plenty of scope for growth and opportunity. So that was the trickiest hurdle, but yeah, we nailed it, which is pretty cool.
Watch this space.
Yeah.
Right. Is there any, in the early days, was there any moments that you sort of went, and what did you learn from it?
There's been a few of those. The first was probably when we scaled up one of our gins from what was then the 10-litre trial still onto our 50-litre commercial still. And we got half the yield that we expected before we hit tails. And we thought, crap, what have we done wrong? Like, all of our numbers, all of our budgets and business cases and everything had a certain yield. And we only got halfway there before the gin essentially hit the tails and we weren't happy with how it tasted.
Mm-hmm.
So all we used our engineering and science backgrounds, and we used a process called first principles. So you just break down exactly what's happening in as simple terms as possible and then work forward to solve that. So, we figured that out. And then there was, of course, another one. We hit winter and our gin was cloudy in the bottles because we were trying to put too much flavour in it. And then we solved that one, and it's just a constant evolution. But luckily those uh-ohs are getting smaller and smaller now.
Not as much as
the first ones.
That's great. Now, because you're nimble and you can experiment, what have you played around with any sort of seasonal botanicals or small batch ideas that you haven't quite released yet or about to release?
We have. Yep, we've got a few things in the pipeline at the moment. We've got a few things that we've worked on in the past. But developing a gin, like a recipe, is only one part of the puzzle. Then you need the labels, you need to be able to market it and sell it and all of that stuff as well. So it's easy to make a gin, but it's hard to sell a gin. So it takes a whole lot of effort. And where we are now, we're literally heading into peak. We've got our first gin festival this weekend up in Taitat near Christchurch. Then October, bottle stores will start ramping up their orders and stuff. So all of our improvement work goes on the back burner until about March.
Yeah,
and then we get back into it. So yes, we're small, and I like to think we're nimble, but yeah, things are still busy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, bring on the gin drinking season.
Yes.
Now, I love that you offer refills. Customers can bring back the empty bottles for a discount. How did that come about, and what's the response been like?
So, yeah, bottle refills are really popular. It's kind of taken us by surprise, really. We had a lot of customers. I mean, it's hard throwing out a nice gin bottle, right? You go to put your gin bottle in the bin and it just feels wrong. So we had a lot of customers bringing their bottles back to us going, can you take these? And it takes so long to peel the labels off and clean all the adhesive off. So it's not really economical. So we wanted to somehow reuse them, and we thought, well, why don't we just fill them back up? So we looked at the numbers, and to buy a bottle and the label and the cork is about $5. So we thought, why don't we just refill them for the customers and give them $5 off? And it's been incredible. We've done over 250 refills to date. They're just the ones that are easy to track in our system.
Yeah,
it's been amazing.
That's cool. Right. Now let's talk about what happens when someone visits the cellar door in Geraldine. What's the vibe that you want them to take away? Beyond that, that's tasty. What's the feeling that you hope that they leave with?
So, I mean, we have quite a simplistic view on this. We just want people to be happy. People have a good time, to leave with a smile. Because things can easily become too serious and stressful. I don't know if it's just these days or forever or since COVID or whatever, but
yeah,
if people can chill out, have a good time, smile, enjoy some gin, and just leave feeling warm and fuzzy and happy, that's what we want to achieve, right? That's our mission.
Absolutely. Now, and finally, Andrew, it's Friday evening. What is your personal go-to favorite from your Humdinger lineup, and how do you like to enjoy it?
So the dry gin, yeah, that's my baby. The citrus gin, that's Saskia's baby, but the dry, that's mine. It's everything I look for in a gin. It's got its nice, subtle citrus opening. It's got that rich but balanced juniper body, and then that nice long finish of spices that overall just work well and balance out nicely. So I just pair it with Fever Tree Indian Tonic. Got my favorite stemless wine glass, just pour it over ice and no garnish.
Yep, perfect.
Balance the gin exactly how I want it, so a garnish just throws it out. So
you don't
gin,
need
tonic,
it.
Ice, happy days.
Yep, easy peasy. Right, Andrew, it's been a pleasure to hear your story behind the stills. Thank you for sharing your journey from engineering and biology to bold botanical brilliance. Humdinger is one of those distilleries that we love to celebrate. Thoughtful, local, and packed with character. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me. I've really enjoyed myself.
Thank you. Now, if you're keen to pick up a bottle of Humdinger gin, head over to nzspiritguide.com for more details. Or if you're ever in Geraldine, make sure you stop into the distillery and say hello to Andrew and Saskia. Until next time, stay curious, drink responsibly, and keep your top shelf full of stories.
That's a wrap on this episode of Tales from the Top Shelf. We hope you've enjoyed this peek into the craft and creativity behind New Zealand's distilling scene. As always, sip slow, enjoy responsibly, and don't forget to support our incredible local spirit makers. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf. Catch you next time for more behind the bar stories.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.